Stay with us. It's April 7th. Are we at the 6th? I think it's the 6th.
The homeland. For only one reason.
The president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism? Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Owns its own self. Maybe it's the Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your president raises a question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is
home? And your home right now is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You can call us at 427-3772. You can tune us in on the internet at www.microradio.net/FRSC, or maybe you're listening to us. You can write to us at Free Radio Santa Cruz at P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And you can catch a lot of this information at a slower pace with a pencil in your hand if you call the voicemail at 427-4523. Free Radio Santa Cruz is free, but it's not free to run. We got to pay for it. So any donations of equipment, money, goodwill, labor, we're interested in. If you want to be a part of the collective, you want to have your own show, you can do that too, perhaps. Just give a call to 427-4523. You'll be asked to submit a tape and talk to some of the inner elite to see how you tease smiles out on their faces. Actually, there are open spots available, so do get in touch if you have something that you want to broadcast that you think Free Radio is not broadcasting now that would be of community interest. Again, 427-4523. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadside, the long version. Today is the 6th, and we are the Daylight Savings Time Up So Early Hoo-Ha-Ha version, and you're probably I was here about 5 or 10 minutes late. My guest didn't meet me as he had said he was going to at our secret meeting spot. Our station is top secret except for the police, the FCC, and the federal authorities who know full well where we are, but we hold them off with your help. So we are unlicensed, we are unapologetic, and we are uncensored, except by ourselves, of course. That's always a problem. But hey, you're not censored. You can call in. You can talk. 427-3772. My subjects are civil rights on the streets and all around the town, the war, police misconduct, and sometimes police good conduct. That I don't talk too much about because, I see a lot of sort of standard, unabusive police contacts with people. I think the police have a function. There are some who don't, but I think that there's a function for police. The trouble is that the institution of the police in our town has become politicized, as it has in many communities, whereby the requests of the police chief are simply law or holy writ, and what happens to oversight bodies is they get eliminated, such as the Citizens Police Review Board, or sidelined. They're now paying $40,000 to an out-of-town attorney to supposedly monitor police misconduct complaints, but of course that has about snowball's chance in hell of making any meaningful changes in police department policies, such as racial profiling, selective enforcement, use of force without documentation, lethal use of force without meaningful review, and a whole series of other issues that have arisen over the course of the last decade and a half, where I've been in pretty continuous residence here in Santa Cruz, though I've been around since the 70s, on and off. So we don't really have a fair or even-handed police force generally. That's the problem. It is biased against the poor. It is biased against the homeless. It is biased against political activists. You might say, hey, you know, all those police officers, they're helping those peace protests. To an extent, the police sort of try to stay one jump ahead of the peace protest, but the people who are on the cutting edge, like the people who did the 24-hour peace vigil, find themselves relentlessly harassed by the police and kind of inveigled into deals with the police. Oh, if you only give up these civil rights, then we'll let you stay here. If you don't use the town clock between 1 and 6 as a protest spot, even though no one could meaningfully complain about that, although the city council had it declared a park just specifically to eliminate people in that area during those hours because of the unsightly homeless and their tedious need to sleep at night, which the city council continues to deny under Mayor Rubber Stamp Riley. You have a situation where you have a differential of power here, where there's unequal treatment of people, there's no equal justice under the law, and there's naturally a lot of resentment that happens because of that. And properly so. People should be angry about injustice. They should be angry about this damned illegal war that the Democratic Party is rolling over for, I hope the mainline peace organizations aren't rolling over for it. A lot of people are demoralized about it. We're going to be talking about that as well. And you're welcome to call in and talk about these issues. We have a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, as well as a town hall meeting at the Civic Auditorium coming up tomorrow, Monday, at 7 o'clock at the Civic Auditorium across from the kitty corner from the library and across from City Hall on Church Street. Everyone is welcome. We'll see how welcome people are. Last time I was at one of these town hall meetings in the Del Mar, I was repeatedly approached by police officers. Officer Brand, actually, was the one officer who kept approaching me and demanding that I sit down. He wanted me to sit down and not stand in the aisles. He sicked the fire marshal on me. The fire marshal didn't really have a problem of his own with me, but he was... Anyway, there's a lot of control pressure going on in this town, and particularly in connection with city government and in connection with the use of public spaces, which is becoming more and more a prerogative of the tourist, of the conservative resident, and of those whom the merchants deem have a right to be in the public spaces. Increasingly, crackdowns using the move-along after an hour law if you have a political table or you're a musician. the crackdown that you cannot sit within 14 feet of a building. We got a call, though. Let me see if I can break into my diatribe to let someone else say something. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Enough of a diatribe.
Yes.
Hi, I was thinking about that, the City Hall fire, the arson fire.
Oh, yeah.
And how they didn't have, the reason that the fire got going so much and did so much damage is that they didn't have a sprinkler system in that particular wing. Do you remember when we were trying to get open up a safe area for homeless people to sleep in their cars, and the one location we thought would be really work really well would be parking structure number 10, which is on Front Street, right kind of between Cafe Mare and Wells Fargo Bank, you know, that three-tiered parking structure?
Yeah, I remember that.
Right, and the fire marshal said we couldn't use the facility because it didn't have a sprinkler system in it.
And I remember that too, yeah.
Yeah. So we don't have a sprinkler system in a parking garage, and homeless people can't use it. But we have a wing of City Hall that doesn't have a sprinkler system, and it's okay for City Hall employees to use it. I detect a double standard.
Well, maybe it means they're just as unconcerned about the rights of their employees as they are about the welfare of homeless people in the city. I mean, that could be a reality. I don't really know what the background is on the sprinkler system in that section of City Hall. I know that that section of City Hall was damaged, I guess, by some... what was it? Was it hosing back in 1997? There was some kind of damage done by people who broke in who were similarly...
Yeah, you know, it wasn't a hosing. What they did was they plugged the toilet up and repeatedly flushed it, causing some flooding.
A flushing?
Yeah, and then there was some damage to a copy machine, and a fire extinguisher was sprayed all around.
$1,000 worth of damage, something like that. I don't remember that figure.
I don't remember the dollar amount for damage.
Well, it's interesting. The same police chief who told you, you know, who told us that we couldn't possibly use parking structure, was it number 10?
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no sprinkler system.
Actually, it was the fire chief that said that.
The fire chief, I'm sorry. Then, but I guess his other number in the police department, Chief Belcher, told us that people couldn't park in the police department parking lot because there was inadequate security.
I know.
That was a good one.
Go figure. But, yeah.
Again, that was a proposal for nighttime parking for homeless people, because there are, as in many cities in Santa Cruz, as you know, Becky, and I hope you don't mind my saying your name on the air.
No, not at all. I'm Becky Johnson.
Yeah, yeah. You've done some writing on the issue of people living in their vehicles, and in Santa Cruz we have scores, if not hundreds, of people who live in their vehicles. In Santa Barbara...
We estimate 30% of the homeless in Santa Cruz live in their vehicles.
Okay. Yeah, I think given that, the fact that people are now being told with this new citywide permit parking scheme that's coming through on Tuesday, with nary a dissenting vote, although I guess there were a few rumbles from Ed Porter, but he just, you know, rolled along with the rest of them, from what I hear. I haven't reviewed the tapes at the last council meeting, but this thing will make it illegal, or make it possible to quickly criminalize all homeless parking on all streets of the city, on all parking lots at night, in all metered spots at night, whether the area is residential or industrial. And I understand the first thing this is going to hit is the downtown area, with the downtown commission looking at it when it has its meeting on Thursday, last Thursday of the month, 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Does that mean that after 8 o'clock at night, when the meters are no longer in effect, that you can't park there unless you have a permit?
I think it'll mean something like that in terms of probably, I'm just kind of estimating here, because I have to have another talk with Mark Adato, who's one of the evil geniuses behind this plan, although he's quite forthcoming in talking about it, which I appreciate. He said he'd even be willing to come on the air, and I've done long interviews with him, but I think it's like between, again, like closing hours between 1 and 6. They'll make periods of time during the night, like they have in Santa Barbara, although in Santa Barbara, I guess they specified recreational vehicles. They are admitting that they're going after people who sleep in their vehicles, or even people who are sleeping somewhere else, because it's illegal to sleep in your vehicle, but parking their vehicles at night when nobody else is using the space.
Well, I hope all the residents in Santa Cruz who currently can have their They can utilize the street parking in front of their house, or their visitors or guests can utilize that street parking and park a vehicle for up to 72 hours without paying anything or having to move it. I hope they're ready to go spend, what, $30 a month for the privilege of parking where they can park for free, and then also have the comfort of knowing that all that money going to the city coffers won't increase the revenue to the city by a cent, because Dick Wilson has assured us that the cost of creating and instituting the bureaucracy to handle this will eat up all revenue that might come in. So he says it'll be self-supporting. It won't cost the city anything. But, yeah, so he wants to basically privatize what is now free and public parking and sell it back to us.
Well, what it expands is the control that the police and parking authorities have over people in what was previously an open area, or not open, but, you know, less regulated area. The rationale, of course, is that the university, which doesn't provide the parking spaces it's supposed to and is continually expanding on the city, has a lot of its students and perhaps some of its faculty parking and taking up residential spaces near the university, which enrages the residents who have no place to park. So they make these permit zones, and that's already been done, I think, in six areas of the city.
Yeah, I understand that's a problem, and that's a problem the city and the university should work out with each other. It's not an excuse to make homeless people's lives just that much less capable of living, and so that so we can increase the rate at which we ticket and boot and tow homeless people's their homes and their entire possessions. Make them even more destitute. I think, you know, stealing from the poor has got to be one of the lowest crimes in the universe.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I'm looking at the City Council agenda for Tuesday, day after tomorrow, when this item is coming up for final reading, as well as Sunday operation of parking meters in the downtown area. All that free parking you had on Sunday is now going to evaporate out for all you parkers out there. And I guess there's some who feel, and I think appropriately so, that cars are a big waste of space, time, money, resources, etc. anyway, and that the more that's done to get rid of them, the better. And I have some sympathy with that point of view, even though I'm an unrecovered car driver. But nonetheless, this does impact poor people who need to use their cars and don't have adequate alternate transportation. The yellow bicycle program that was kind of brought forward briefly from Portland back in the late 90s, I think, was a great idea, which the city should have jumped on. And I don't know how much, maybe it supported it a little bit. I don't know.
Cynthia Matthews didn't support it.
Cynthia Matthews didn't support it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cynthia Matthews didn't support free radio either. I'm afraid Cynthia Matthews has her own thing. And
Cynthia Matthews was also the council member responsible for having the parking meters charge between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. She thought that would be an excellent way of increasing revenue to the city.
Well, yeah, I know Cynthia and I don't agree on many things, although she did return one phone call for the first time in 6 years recently. And then when I kind of called her back to commend her and ask her a second question, I got the traditional silence from her. Interestingly enough, to look at these particular ordinances that are coming up, I want to see if Cynthia Matthews is one of the people who are signing on. Here's the one that says numbers 23, 24, and 25, interestingly enough, on the afternoon agenda. So most working people cannot get in to discuss these things. And normally, ordinance changes are in the evening, and this is a very significant ordinance change, but strangely enough, it's in the afternoon. So people like Jimmy Kelly, who is the legislative lobbyist for the postal carriers, can't get in to talk about it, though he strongly and effectively opposed it, gathered hundreds of signatures against it back in the, in December and January. But let me take a look and see.
I've seen Riley moving the different council times around quite a bit. Unusual start times, unusual times for the redevelopment agency to meet, things like that, so that to add to the confusion. And undoubtedly, it's going to cause less people to be able to attend the city council meetings and to be able to, at the proper time, come up and provide some public commentary on those. I have one more thing, Robert, and then I'll let you back to your diatribe.
Thank you.
I posted the editorial from April 2nd on the santacruz.indymedia.org at their website. with a little commentary on that. It's about the City Hall arson fire and the attempt of the Sentinel and some members of City Council to try to blame homeless people and their advocates for that fire.
Yeah, that seems to have disappeared from the pages, at least of the Sunday Sentinel. I know they were, it was a hot topic, so to speak, for 3 days, but then apparently it cooled off and faded away, but at least that wasn't from my cursory investigation of the topic this morning when I rushed in to look at the Sunday paper. But yeah, for those who are interested, do go to the Indie Media website. I'm going to recommend that several times. It's www.santacruz.indymedia.org. Santa Cruz, www.santacruz.indymedia.org. Thank you very much, Becky.
Okay.
Feel free to call back.
Okay, carry on.
All right. And phone lines are now open, 427-3772. Yeah, I'm looking at the big legal change that's going to happen. It's item number 25, actually, on a Tuesday City Council agenda. It's called Citywide Permit Parking. And it establishes an administrative procedure to add or remove program areas from the city's permit parking zone or street segments from individual program areas. Now you have to go and I think you can only operate within specific program areas, and there are six of them, one near the university, one on the beach flats, I think one on the east side, where you actually, you know, have to go and get 60% of the houses or 62/3 of the house residents in the area to agree, and then you can add a street. And you don't even, and I think you need a public hearing at the moment on that stuff. Now they're going to make it's weakening all that and also allows the city to establish all kinds of new areas. Here's an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. How's it going?
Hey, is this my mystery guest?
Yeah.
Well, listen, you should give a quick call to, let me catch this off the air just for a second. Hang on, don't go. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold you on the phone and show you how to reach our secret location. And you are still coming in?
Yes.
And so that this won't reveal the everything to everybody, let's hear a little bit from an interview that we had to interrupt in the last show from Maddie Fitzgerald, who's an artist we had on the show a couple weeks ago, who was at the town clock and was there when the police despoiled, destroyed, and forced the town clock vigilers to take down the flower fence. And I'll talk to you in just a moment. Hang on.
It's about
five to two, actually.
We're sitting here on the next to the collateral damage statue. I'm talking to Matt Fitzgerald,
public artist,
who is down here keeping witness to the forbidden Freedom for Flowers fence, which I guess wasn't that one of your ideas?
Well, actually, as I stated on another show, I was the kid who, I think I was about 5 years old, and I was making flower crowns in Golden Gate Park, and the kids that were bigger kids at that point, they were probably 14, 15, didn't have jobs, 13, 14, 15, hanging out in the park that summer, spring, and they said, right after school lit up, what are you doing? And I said, I'm making a flower crown. Can you teach us? No one ever taught me how to do it. And I said, okay, and there's little white flowers in Golden Gate Park. They use it in their grass seed, and they have for years. And I taught them to pick those and make the flower crowns and put them on. It was one of those Friday afternoons where it's real sunny out and warm in the park, and the paper says, go out and take pictures of somebody in the park, and we'll put it in for spring, you know, because everyone's always happy for spring to come. So the guy showed up, and he took pictures of these big kids, and they said, what are you? And the big kids with long blonde hair says, we're flower children. And he says, well, what's a flower child? And she's just talking off the top of her head. You know, she's probably 13 or 14, 15. And she says, well, we're against the war. And that's kind of after that was history. So I decided to tell the community that how that day happened, because nobody really recalled or knew. And
we've learned that the flower fence, as it's been called, a flower wall, I guess, has been threatened with removal here. And you were on the radio show while we were kind of talking about this. A call came in from the town clock where we are now, And after that, apparently, you and Cordelia had a conversation with the mayor?
Yeah, Emily was taking photographs in front of my house, and I'm a public artist and landscape designer, architect, and an artist. And so our beginnings and endings and leftovers of all the garden and art things that are outdoor-related are in my front yard by accident, or, you know, we sort of, because I do sometimes work at a...
Did she ask your permission to take those photos?
No, I don't mind. I know some artists get touchy about photos in events and this and that, and it, you know, she's the mayor and she's excited about art, and that's what I want to see, is people excited about art going by my building. But it was timely that I knew about the flower fence and the people wanting to take it down and the chalking issues, and I had some ideas for the city to make it positive for everybody, because the children do have a time warp before they, you know, when they get out of school, when they're 10 or 12, and when they go to work when they're 15.
What did Emily say to you?
I asked Emily, I asked her, I said, I explained to her the story about flower power in the city, and I explained to her about energy and making places for energy to create, and I asked her if she knew about the graffiti program in Philly and how to tap art and benefits to the community. And she's very pro-art, obviously. I mean, she's taking pictures on a Sunday on her day off. Her husband brought her down to see the artwork, and she got out to do it. So, I mean, it shows that she's going our way, and that's good. And I said, you know, they want to take the flower fence down, and the reason the Flower Power press release went out saying that this is a non-violent direct action thing you can do is, and I did it for the women and for the little kids and for people who feel like they need to take to have an action that's not gonna, they're not gonna go break windows, they're not gonna stop traffic, but they want to put out a statement, and it also gives a place to release your war stress.
Well, always the Russian, you could have a good stiff drink.
Yeah, you could do that, yeah, but, you know, with hopefully a load of flour in it. Yeah. But, you know, we asked the bikers to go on bike, you know, ride bikes with flowers or whatever your flower power art is. We asked them to put it out, so this is obviously the kids' response.
Whatever spreads your petals.
Yeah, the kids' response to the flower idea and, you know, sticking that flower in the front of a gun, and they're doing that. And we asked, I just mentioned the mayor, they want to take the flower fence down.
What did Emily say about all this?
She listened to everything, and you could see her weighing both sides, and I think she's kind of getting the solution. I also asked her for a Chocolat Festival, which I've been trying to do, and I used to be a Parks and Recreation planner. And
Chocolat, is that with chocolate as well?
Well, yeah, she's a baker, so I brought that in. I said, Emily, we can get the bakers down here with some chocolate cookies, and, you know, and bring people over for the Chocolat.
Tell you she'd call off the cops or not?
ALK. I didn't directly ask her to. I let her, you know, she's a position of power, and, you know, but I did see her talking to the police as we came up here, so maybe she's doing that. Because the fence is still here.
Did you mention, yes, it is, and it's actually 210 or so. Did you mention that the police were threatening to remove it?
Yeah, I did. I said, I hear the police want to take the flower fence down. I said, these kids are doing good. They're not breaking windows. They haven't stopped traffic. They're not,
yeah,
you know.
But they are sleeping at night. I mean, that's questionable behavior.
Yeah. And peace activists get tired, and we want to see more people down here to spell these kids, because they're the leaders of the future. You know, they're going to probably
Smiley
be...
Smiley Riley can show up.
Yeah, she's kind of meandering this way. I don't know if she'll be here, but I can be reactionary, but then I can be very solution-oriented, because I'm an artist and architect, and we create, and that's what we need to do, is create our own reality.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you for bringing the issue to the the mayor's attention.
You're welcome. It's just, you know, the accidents that happen in my life end up creating many things, and I'm lucky.
It's extremely accidental, and
yeah.
I have the greatest respect for you in spite of these accidents.
Of course, within hours, the fence was removed, or I should say taken down under threat of removal by police, in spite of this conversation with Mayor Riley that this activist had, or I guess she and another activist. But in any case, again, it shows how little interest or how little power the mayor has in terms of affecting police policy. And you might say, well, it's the city manager who controls the police, not the mayor. We have to be understanding of the weak city council system. But in fact, if mayors or city council members wish to exercise more authority, they can, if only speaking up to use the city council as a podium. They risk, of course, criticism from those who feel the police can do no wrong, or that they are somehow pawns of activists or some such thing. But the fact of the matter is that we are in the middle of a repressive era that is getting worse and worse. The entire nation suborned by an illegal regime that is engaging in a violent, illegal war of aggression in the Middle East. And if now isn't the time to speak up, I sure as hell don't know when is. So, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It is actually 10:10. You may say 9:10 on your clock, but that ain't right, because we're on daylight savings time, so fix that clock, or else be prepared to get into various differences of opinion on timing and scheduling. If you want to call in, the phone number is 427-3772. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. And we actually have recovered our guest, who is a... I think I may let him introduce himself. Let's see. Is your mic working there? Say hello there.
Hello.
Doesn't look like it is working. Great.
Hello.
No, it's not working. We're going to have to share a mic here. How exciting. Maybe one of those omnivorous techs that occasionally comes wandering through. Technicians, if they happen to be in the area and are interested, might come in and assist us in plugging in the mic or, who knows, doing whatever is necessary to fix it. So, what is your name, sir?
Walter Millicent.
And Walter, or Walt, as I guess you call yourself?
Yes.
You're a man who spent a lot of time at the Peace Vigil down in Santa Cruz, both when it was at Cooper and Pacific. What was Cooper Pacific? Across from the Cinema 9, for it was there for a week before the police drove it away from there. And then you spent some time at the town clock when it was there.
Yes, I did. I was very proud to be there.
And you were there in the wee hours at night often, right?
Yeah, I tried staying awake all night so that I could keep an eye out for any officers that might want to ticket people. And also just to keep an eye on things, because it's good practice for me to stay up late like that.
Oh-ho, so you're still rebelling against those early bedtimes that your mom and dad enforced on you as a babe?
No, it's just I like to be able to push myself beyond my normal limits.
Aha, so it's a sort of a grueling survival exercise in downtown Santa Cruz.
Partly, but, if I really don't think that losing sleep is really a good thing, you know, because it really ruins your brain's ability to learn.
You were also, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of trying to protect the sleep of those who are at the vigil, because, as we know, in Santa Cruz, unless you have a certain amount of money, it's illegal to sleep at night, right?
That's true, yes. And I certainly would want to help the other vigilers there.
So, did you actually ever observe the police come and give a sleeping ticket at these vigils?
I did observe a camping ticket that was given, and of course you were there. But while I was there, it seemed to be that nobody was trying to mess with anybody. And when they did, we all woke each other up and everything, and we kept a close eye on 6 o'clock, which was supposed to be the danger hour and everything.
The idea being that unsightly people sleeping at 6 a.m. were inappropriate for a downtown business district?
I guess that's the word.
Now, when you saw this camping ticket, because I don't quite remember it, can you remind me of what the circumstances were?
Yes, the man was sitting on the sidewalk, and I guess he had fallen asleep.
That's right. That was around the corner from the vigil, I remember. In fact, that was a character who was something of a thorn in the side of the vigil, as I remember, but he was getting harassed by police officers. Yes, I recall. I think I may have played that tape on the radio. It was before the sleeping ban midnight hour, or 11 o'clock hour, when it becomes illegal to sleep between 11 and 8:30 is the deadly no sleeping time zone area for Santa Cruz, either in your vehicle, outside your vehicle, on any public property, or actually on much private property, unless you're in a fenced in or not visible side yard or a backyard with the owner's permission. I remember that incident, now you mentioned it, and I know that instead of giving him a sleeping ticket, because it was before 11, as you pointed out, they gave him a camping ticket, which is a higher fine and also can be done 24 hours a day, but which is also another one of these completely bogus harassment tickets in his case, because you have to show intent to remain overnight. And there may be a moment of sleep, but he didn't have, as far as I could see, a sleeping bag unrolled or a tent and stove set up next to the Cooper house or around that area. He was just resting for a moment and fell asleep, right?
Yes, and in fact, when you do that, there's really no way you can sleep through the night, because you snooze for a while, the cold wakes you up, and then you kind of lull awake, and then you go, hey, I got to get warm before I can sleep anymore.
Well, the difficult thing, from the legalistic minds who did a lot of defending of these camping tickets back in the late 80s when there were mass protests against the sleeping ban, a lot of people got ticketed at the town clock, actually, through voluntary sleep-ins and at City Hall, was that whereas a sleeping ticket only requires evidence that a person is sleeping between the forbidden hours, a camping ticket requires you have to show that the person intended to stay overnight, either by his word or by some objective evidence. It's a much harder standard to prove, or it should be anyway, and it actually was, because we actually had an attorney in those days who, even in the court of meat grinder Mulligan, who we now recommend everybody disqualify because of his bias toward the police and his hostility. It's not really hostility toward the homeless. It's a bureaucratic preference for grinding out fines for the city and the county. We used a defense that was more effective, and it was essentially you have to show evidence of intention. And in those days, grinning Ray Glock Grunike was our attorney, and he was very, very good at that. He's a brilliant attorney. He later became disbarred because he became completely overloaded. He took too many homeless cases, I think. Very good heart. And he ran on the Green Party ticket, I guess this last time. Was it for Congress? Was it for state representative? I don't know. It was on some state ticket. And apparently didn't have a lot of energy to put into the campaign, or that didn't work too well. But there is a difference between sleeping and camping. And the police use the camping ordinance now, section of the camping ban prohibition section of the camping ordinance, to go after people 24 hours a day if they want to give them a $162 fine. Essentially, it drags them into court or puts them in a position where if they don't go to court, they get warrants and they get harassed and hassled. Part of the theory here, and it's a bad theory, is we get these folks out of town by setting up warrants for them because it kind of drives them away. But in fact, when you put people in a position where they miss their court dates and they have to leave town, they can be returned to town because warrants require, in many cases, or set up the scene for the demand that someone come back and deal with his or her court date. And I guess, to some extent, there's a preference. I'm not quite sure what the process is. Maybe somebody can inform me. I don't know why I don't know this after God knows how many years. Does the sheriff's office here initiate the demand for a warrant return, or is the fact that there is a warrant out mean that the sheriff's office is sort of required to bring that person back? I doubt that they are really required to bring people back, because I know we have a case in the current jail of Jason Pascal, who I'm going to be talking about later on the air. He may even call into the show, for all I know, and we're hoping he does call the show Collect from Jail, because he has been held there for such crimes as possession of a milk crate. He has been cited for tarot terrorism, say reading people's cards on the street, and most recently he was picked up on a warrant from New Hampshire for breaking parole or probation on a possession of marijuana with intent to sell charge, and the warrant was, apparently the New Hampshire people didn't want him when Sergeant Baker tried to get him deported last year, when Baker was accusing him of using hypodermic needles, and Baker was holding up the needles saying, "Do we want these on Pacific Avenue?" Of course, he's a diabetic, and he does shoot insulin, but Baker conveniently ignored, didn't know, or didn't care about that, and of course simply defamed the man and jailed him on that basis. This has very little to do with you, me, or the sleeping ban. As you can see, I've run away with the topic again. You do other things than vigil at night. In fact, you have a Headwaters Outdoor School. You teach a class there?
As a matter of fact, I'm an alternate teacher in a lot of the courses, but I'm one of the main teachers in the skills and bow making class.
And in fact, you have brought with you, looks like an arsonist's tools. I think I've got the ears of the police to perk up here. It's a kind of a bow and a couple pieces of wood, the kind of thing that, you know, you see that somebody try to rub two sticks together and spark a fire out in the wilderness?
That's a bow drill kit and a hand drill kit. Still the most potent invention of mankind.
Now, wait a minute. What about flint? Come on, isn't that a little easier to use your lighter?
Yeah, but you need special materials for that, like, for instance, char cloth, which is a special tinder, and also metal helps.
Well, what can people who are concerned with the civil rights of poor and homeless people learn from this Headwaters Outdoor School?
Well, I think that we try and share nature with people in a way that they can reconnect with it. And I think that part of the way that the city is eliminating camping in the city and eliminating sleeping and really harassing people who really don't have much other recourse, really is a kind of separating them from nature more and more so that they'll be more like us. And when I say us, you know, I'm including myself because I feel separate from nature in a lot of ways. But in that separation, we lose a lot of connection with the land and a lot of wellness of being because of that connection.
Now, wait a minute. Nature exists to serve us. We know that. I mean, it's good for, you know, oil wells and things of that sort. It provides us with the necessary McDonald's tools we have to munch our way through the day. But are you suggesting that somehow we owe something to nature? What is this, some sort of hippy-dippy, artsy-fartsy, back-to-nature nonsense?
Well, in fact, I think that if we continue to ignore our connection to nature and keep ignoring the mess that we've already made of it, then we're doing it at our own peril. We've recreated the earth in the city in our own image, and it's a violent image.
Now, wait a minute. I mean, all right, let's grant your proposition. I'm sure Celia Scott and other strong environmentalists would agree with you. The same environmentalists who excluded any opportunity for a campground, let's say, in the Poganip area, and who are essentially, seem to be somewhat hostile. They were hostile to Camp Paradise a year and a half ago, the camp that existed along the riverside run by homeless people, which served as an overflow for the completely inadequate Interface Satellite Shelter Program in 2001 until it was washed away and then kind of written away by the city bureaucrats who betrayed the promises they made. Ed Porter was infamous among them, as well as Scott Kennedy and Mark Premack, in not establishing an alternate camping ground for people to go to. But the point here is these campers are despoiling the wilderness areas, and are you suggesting we should allow, you're championing the right of people to sleep downtown, and then if that isn't bad enough, they're going to camp in the wilderness, they're going to ruin the tourism, and then they're going to ruin the wilderness. What is your thing, man?
Well, if you really look at how things are going, our overpopulation is really sprawling all over the land, and nobody's saying anything about that.
Hey, wait a minute. Pat Kittle is.
Well, I haven't heard what he said. Sorry.
No, Pat is quite an eloquent speaker and a persistent one. Some would say a naggingly persistent one, and he's called into this show. He may be listening in. And he speaks at City Council, the Board of Supervisors, and other places about the issues of overpopulation. He's as persistent on that issue as I am on the issue of civil rights for poor people. But what about it? What about the sleeping ban and the camping ordinance? Aren't these legitimate uses of the public law for the peace and security and the health and welfare of our city so that the broad community can use the green areas without finding, you know, people's trash and hobos hanging out there with drinking beer and then folks just messing up the downtown and driving away all the tourists by creating a very unpleasing picture for those coming in?
Well, I think that, first of all, the trash and the drinking and things like that are symptomatic. I think that people do those things because they're unhappy. And as far as, like, letting them camp out and everything, perhaps if they were being more productive in their lives, they wouldn't be so unhappy.
So wait a minute, you know, I see. So camp, are you saying people are camping because they're unhappy, or they're drinking because they're unhappy? You mean taking, having a brewski means I'm unhappy? What are you, some kind of a communist?
No, I'm just being very general. I don't mean that for every instance.
Well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772, 427-FRSC is our call-in number. You see that line flashing? Well, let me know, because it means I'm ignoring a phone call and probably shouldn't be. And if you want to call in, you can. It is an open line. You're invited to come speak. And I also want to announce right now, and I'll probably announce this periodically throughout the hour, not only should you email City Council immediately to dump this stupid permit parking proposal, which is designed to criminalize not just sleeping in vehicles, as I've said before, but parking your vehicle in the city anywhere that the Downtown Association and its allied bigoted groups don't like. But it is, as I guess caller Becky Johnson said, designed to seize the space that we've all been using and sell it back to you. I mean, we know that Jay Garner is going to do something like this to the Iraqis. He's going to be our new military Führer over there in Iraq, assuming that he's able to take command in Baghdad. But here in Santa Cruz, I don't think we want no stinking Führers, and I don't think we want the what was previously free area taken over by city bureaucrats. So I would encourage you to contact city council and to oppose item 25 and tell them to hold it off until a time when the whole community can actually talk about it, not just in the afternoon, the select few bureaucratic hacks that the city can, you know, get there. Actually, they get paid to sit around and support this shit. Let me actually give you the phone number for it's the email. The phone number for the city council is 420-5020, and that's how you can contact them. But if you want to email them, you don't have a phone, or you don't want to waste your time on the phone. Let's see. I'm going to the internet here. City Council. City Council at CI. ci.santa-cruz.ca.us. And the phone number, 420-5020. If you want to call Mayor Riley directly and tell her what you think of this crap, it is 420-5022. Of course, as I said, a city council town hall meeting, which means sit down and shut up after your 2 minutes or 3 minutes, depending on Mayor Riley's preferences, with her select people wandering the aisles with mics and cutting you off after that time. We had a little exchange on the internet on this issue with Robert Nahas, who was one of the monitors last time. He's also the spouse of the mayor and a musician, and a man who's been involved in public policy discussions a lot with me on the internet previously in a relatively good-natured fashion. He's taken to attacking me recently as the potential evil genius who possibly inspired arson at City Hall and things of that sort. He's putting it in a somewhat vaguer way than that, but suggestions that scapegoat homeless people for the arson at City Hall when there's no evidence that I've heard of that indicates who it was or what group it was from or what the hell it was all about. Some would say it's guilty conscience by those who are close to power to suggest this. Some would say they just don't like the way I indeed speak out very strongly against Mayor Riley. I think some people may take this personally if they have close associations with the mayor, and I understand that. I mean, it's hard to hear someone you like or love criticized as a politician, but I think, unfortunately, that's the position that these politicians put themselves in, and that goes with the territory, and so I'm not apologetic for that. In fact, I'm proud of it. I'm glad I'm doing it. I wish more people did it, and I think that's the way to get clowns like Farr, our representative, who have for years been rubber-stamping military appropriations, okaying uranium-depleted weapons and cluster bombs, and are still doing so, by the way, to finally stop in their tracks when they get 8,400 letters, 99% of which say, stop the war. Now, Farr has been saying stop the war, but unfortunately he's not been saying things like bring home the troops, which is the way you stop the war. And until last week, he had been voting for military appropriations. And to his credit, I say that twice, I'll even say it three times, to his credit, he voted against the military appropriation after voting first to send it to the House floor. He voted against it when it hit the House floor. One of 12, count them, 12 members of Congress, zero senators, 12 members of the House of Representatives who voted against the $63 billion out of $75 billion supplemental appropriation for the war. Now, many of us went to Farr's office. Well, some of us went to Farr's office. A few of us, actually, and that included Robert Nahas, to his credit, by the way, and as well as numerous other people like Louis LaFortune and Amy Courtney and Cassandra Brown and Steve Argue. A host of people went to that office, and we essentially told Farr's aide to shit or get off the pot. We want him to vote against the appropriation. We want him to also call for an end to the war by calling for a ceasefire, ending the bombing, and sending in the troops. Not just saying, gosh, it's too bad we got into the war. We want those troops home as soon as we can. You know, gosh, we hope it really happens. No, withdraw the fucking troops. That's how you get the war stopped. You withdraw, you stop them from being murderers, you stop them from being killers, and you stop them from being killed. It seems pretty simple to me. Maybe I'm just, missing some basic element of the geopolitical map here that I'm missing. By the way, I see someone called in, and I just didn't catch the phone. Please try again. I will definitely keep my eye on it. There we go. Here we go. You're on the air. Hi. Welcome to Free Radio.
I have a comment.
Please.
Or a question.
Sure.
Maybe it's inappropriate for the... maybe it is, Robert. Let me just ask you this. Why do you want to have the war stop?
Well, I think that, first of all, it's an illegal war. It's a war of aggression. It's a war that is undertaken for narrow political purposes, actually a broad political fantasy, grandiose fantasy by the Bush regime, which has very little to do with the stated purposes, which are supposedly to disarm Saddam Hussein and to essentially assert the liberties of the Iraqi people. I'm in favor of disarming all these dumb regimes, and I include the U.S. as the major criminal regime among them. I'd like to see nuclear and weapons of mass destruction disarm them, no question. But this is bullshit. They are not really doing this. This is an opportunity to expand U.S. power in the Middle East, and I think it's only the first of a series of such conquests, and that is, I think, very and gravely dangerous. And I don't think it's what the American people want either. They support our troops, as we all support people who are from the United States who are thrown into bad situations. But the best way to support them is to bring their butts home. That's my view.
How do you figure it's illegal?
How do I figure it's illegal? Okay,
no,
I think...
You said it was illegal. How is it illegal?
Well, I think that UN Resolution 1441, which they're using as their authorization... Actually, when it was debated, it was clear from the major powers who voted for it, and those are Russia, France, China, Germany, etc., other than the UK and the US, indicated that this did not authorize preemptive military action.
So you're saying it's illegal by international
standards. It's a war of aggression.
But certainly it's not illegal by American due process.
Well, that is a good question, too. Because while the Congress supposedly authorized use of force, it did not declare war. And I believe that a declaration of war is what is really needed here. If Congress wants to declare war, then let Congress get off its fat butt and declare war and not turn it over to some ideological right-wing Christian nut who's in the White House and who's being, you know, advised by a bunch of a similar coterie or cartel of people, and who is then going to sell out Iraq to Halliburton and the other corporations as soon as they conquer it. Yeah. excuse me a second. Let me clear my throat here. But what's your thought, caller? I mean, everyone knows what I think. What do you think?
I think that the situation post-World War II, which was the last time the United States formally declared war, is dramatically different. I think we're in the, certainly the closing months of this conflict, maybe even closing days. Look at the posters, the mosaics of Saddam Hussein holding up a pistol, and this is quite the high-profile crackpot.
I agree.
By global standards, and I'm not defending U.S. action south of the border ever. I'm not defending U.S. action in Indonesia or anywhere like that, right? But on a global scale, Saddam Hussein, oil aside, is quite the crackpot. Now, as to whether U.S. intervention is justified in the region, I would say that given the tendencies of those that are in power in the United States presently and the lack of credible resistance, that the writing was on the wall for, I would say going back to last fall, that this was going to happen. My assumption was that this was going to happen over the holidays, by the way. I thought that we'd have launched this assault during the holidays. I think the world is complicated. I think that those who talk about disarmament are extremely naive and disingenuous, and they're not even willing to look at the microcosm of their own backyard to get an idea of what the human condition is about. We should consider ourselves grateful and lucky that the United States of America has the weapons and authority and military logistics that it has, because if we did not, somebody else would. Those are my points.
Okay.
So I say that we're in the closing portion of this conflict, I don't think that even Donald Rumsfeld is necessarily pro-war, but I think that the direction of America becoming, let's say, preemptive, you may be correct on that, And we'll have to see what lies ahead with that. But I would strongly urge against the United States of America surrendering any of its sovereign authority to the United Nations under any circumstances ever.
Well, can I say something about that, caller?
Sure.
About some of the arguments you've made. The United States spends more and sells more weapons and has more weaponry than, the top 12 other nations combined. And you might say that, oh, you're using a we. I don't think the White House is part of a we that includes anybody in Santa Cruz or most people in the country. I think what you have is a foreign kind of entity sitting in Washington, which has massive, unthinkable, destructive power, and now feels enabled to use it whenever the fuck it wants. And that, to me, is the major danger in the world today. To me, that's not the major danger. It is a major danger, and it's the one we have to confront. In a certain sense, it is the major danger. In another sense, obviously, depends on where you live, whether you're getting, your fingernails torn off by torturers in different countries. You know, some of them being U.S. torturers these days, apparently, with the okay of the formerly liberal columnists like Alan Dershowitz. But the fact of the matter is, I think that, you know, it's not a matter of surrendering sovereignty to the U.N. It's a matter of common sense. If you try to impose your will on everyone else, I suppose Rome did it for 900 years. And the U.S. can try to do it. I didn't think that's what we were all about, what democracy is all about. And a lot of people, I think, aren't all about that.
I think the U.N. is a good thing. It's good to talk.
Or even allies, Carl. What about our major allies?
I think it's good that the U.N. is based in New York City, which is probably where it should be, in the greatest metropolitan area of the United States of America. And maybe it's the focal point of the world would be New York. Arguably, that could be argued up against London or even Tokyo. But I think the U.N. belongs in the United States. I think the United States deserves credit for propping up the U.N., and continuing to prop up its credibility. But I think when the rubber meets the road, Mr. Norris, that the United States of America has the sovereign right to flex its muscle where and when it chooses.
Right.
And in regards to everybody in Santa Cruz being rancy anti-Bush, I think you're very hysterically mistaken. Mm-hmm. And therein lies the point. I mean, you have a handful, maybe 300, maybe 300, maybe 400 hysterical, ranting, party-esque protesters, and you want to call that the community, and I would say that's absolutely ridiculous. I would say take a look at the people that commute over the hill. Take a look at the people that don't show up at SCAN meetings.
Caller, I haven't turned up at the SCAN meeting for 2 years.
One last point here.
Don't hang up.
I found myself bored 8 years ago by the local protesters who are courageous when it is 3,000 miles away.
Hey, now, come on. Now, you know I've been protesting local stuff for years.
I understand that, Robert. I accept that distinction from you.
I have to interrupt you.
I defend you on that basis.
But,
Go ahead.
But listen, let me. My co-host here, I should say, my guest wants to have a word. Can I have him put in a word here?
And then you can, sure, of course.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I appreciate your views, and respectfully, I find that I'm feeling like. Have you ever heard the expression? Well, of course you have. You turned out just like your father, you know? It's like we're becoming the thing we hate in this country, a dictatorship, through oppressiveness. So,
just to throw that in, because you're putting some personal points here, my father was very anti-Vietnam War. I'm a veteran. My father was very against my joining the military. I'm the only one in my family that joined the military. This was in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts a perspective on my father in that era. Although my father is a veteran from World War II, deceased now, but he was of that era. I don't know whether that's a credible argument. That's kind of like a, that's kind of spurious and silly as far as I'm concerned. I'm 52 years old. I like to believe, and maybe you can correct me, that I develop my own opinions, and I'm certainly willing to be wrong on occasion, and I'm willing to deal with the ambiguity of the grayness of issues and take a position on an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And my position on the issue is that, once again, we should consider ourselves blessed that it's the United States of America that ended up with the military authority that it has in 2003, because if we did not, somebody else would.
The military
and
authority,
as,
though,
as imperfect as
right.
this country is, and as double standard-esque as this country is, and hypocritical as it is,
the exertion of that.
We are so far in advance of the other countries that were near us, like the Soviet Union, or even now like China. That it's not even a contest.
Well, you know, I don't think that's, Bob, I think that's a false dilemma. I don't think it's one country or another country. There's got to be a big bully on the block, and I'm glad we're the big bully.
Tell me how it's going to be different, Robert.
Well,
I mean,
you know, there are people, there are statesmen like Wilson and people who came out of the Second World War, it created the UN, who are looking for a way to make it different.
As I said earlier in my call, we stepped in to assist the establishment of the UN. This is a good thing. It does not deny.
I don't quite buy that. I mean, I think it is true that the UN, which essentially became, it was a confabulation of essentially five major powers, and I guess to some extent, I mean, the UN has had some power in dealing with some issues of, you know, peace and war.
Who ponied up the dough for the UN?
U.S. has been withholding a lot of money for the last 30 years from the UN, as you probably know. You know, but I mean, it's not all about the UN. It's about our system of allies. It's about other major nations. It's about standing alone against the world and intervening half a world away to destroy the sovereignty of another country when that country has not attacked the United States. I'm sorry.
We went into Somalia. We went into Grenada. We went into Panama.
You can go into
We went into Kosovo.
Now that's
right?
with allies.
With
Europe agreeing on that issue. Yes.
Where is that? The from the halls of Tripoli to the sands of Montezuma or something like that.
That's
right?
not a good source to quote.
Right,
I don't
right,
think.
These
Marine
are,
Corps anthems.
Right. These are American interventions. Beyond our shores.
Are you justifying these interventions? Do you think it was a good idea to move in and say and seize Noriega before he exposed the elder Bush? I mean, you feel that the Grenada invasion was a great idea?
I am somewhat ambivalent about this.
Me too. I think it's bullshit.
I think that with the power that we have, there are... What I hope that comes out of this, if we're going to conduct ourselves preemptively, which may well be the next thing.
It's not preemptive.
Wait a minute. If we're going to conduct ourselves preemptively, then I hope that we do it in a sincere way across the board.
Yeah, we're sincerely murdering people over there. I'm sorry, Bob. It doesn't wash with me. There is no threat to the United States from this guy's regime. Even the powers around him weren't asking us to intervene. This is complete crap. And I'm surprised that you bought it.
I don't agree with that, Robert.
No,
I mean,
no,
we've all seen the picture of Saddam Hussein.
Not one weapon of mass destruction has been found, my boy. What am I going
to
tell you?
Here's a guy holding up a pistol, right? And you can't turn around 300 yards and not see a picture of Saddam Hussein.
So what?
He is a despot.
There are despots all over the world. What do you suggest we take them out one by one?
As I was trying to say, that if we get into this preemptive phase, which
a preemptive argument.
There is a foreign policy cadre in Washington that wants this to occur, and certainly this is the first step, and maybe it won't occur. Maybe this will create some dialogue that will redirect our energies. But if this be the case, that we're going to become preemptive.
You and the military are preemptive,
The elected leadership of the Democratic Republic of the United States of America.
Democratic Republic.
I'll throw this in here, too, now, Robert.
You mean
It may well be in 2004 that I vote for George W. Bush.
Well,
and I voted for Nader in 2000, by the way.
Well, let's hope we have an election.
Okay, now what I wanted to say that I haven't got a chance to say was that if we're going to go about this preemptive policy, that we conduct it with sincerity and truth across the board, and that means that we clean up our act with the dictators that we establish, the dictators that we knock off, despots.
But in the meantime, it's okay to bomb Baghdad. Is that right, Bob?
I think that once the gate has cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war,
there's just no stopping. You all got to march in lockstep, right, Bob?
Once you're going to do it, once you do it, Robert, once you have determined, once the elected
you and I haven't determined anything. What are you talking about,
Robert? We live in a democratic republic with an elected leadership.
You know we don't.
And once it's been determined that we're going to go to war, then...
Once it's been determined, I like the way you say that. That's the past.
Then I think that one not only supports the troops, but one hopes for the best.
Mm-hmm.
And one hopes for a quick and as decisive as possible a victory,
right.
And as honorable a conclusion to this conflict as possible.
Oh, they're all honorable men,
Robert, I think that what's being done, by the way, given the circumstances and the imperfection of humanity, is pretty good. As I listen to Rumsfeld, as I kind of watch on CNN and the other networks,
engaging battle. Okay, Bob, I'm going to roll on this one pretty quick. Sum up,
God bless America.
Okay, thank you, Bob. All righty. And as you can see, there are strong, heated differences about this genocidal war in the Middle East. Now, genocide is a little strong. They're not going, as the U.S. is not targeting a specific group. I guess they're targeting any civilians who happen to be in the war. This collateral damage, forgive me. We have a caller in response, or who knows, just a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Yeah, this is Mad John.
Hey there, Mad John.
Well, I just heard this Macho Bob, and he's typical of what middle America thinks. I go down south quite a bit, and they're all like macho. Well, not all of them. Certainly not the black people. Thank God for the black people. But the point of it is that, like in that movie, Stupid White Men, he's typical of that. And for him to be pulling this shit that we've used our military responsibly and all this stuff, I mean, think of Guatemala, think of El Salvador, think of Nicaragua, think of Chile, where the CIA and Kissinger was involved with assassinating a duly elected president. Think of Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil. Look around the world. But I'm telling you, it's just plain ignorance. People like him are just on a macho trip, and that's what this stinking war is all about. It's a great big macho trip because our duly unelected president is on a macho trip. He's a blankety. He's a goddamn coward. Anyway, about war, he went was in the Texas Air National Guard, and he didn't show up and all that. And he has the gall to sit back and said, young men, many of them black and Hispanic, because they can't have trouble finding jobs and get suckered into our military. I'm telling you, we've got a problem in this country, and if people don't realize that we probably are fascist right now, and we're heading in even a more a fascist direction. So I think we've got to continue these demonstrations. We've got to do what we can to protest against this junta that's running this country. And so we've got to get together, because people like Macho Bob are the kind that will eventually wipe out this whole goddamn planet.
John, let me ask you a question or two, can I?
Yeah.
First of all, you're not called Mad John for nothing. I know that about 12, 13 years ago, you were instrumental in leading protests against harassment, incarceration, forced drugging.
Yeah, psychiatric oppression. I still feel very strongly about that.
And I know that last year, AB 1421 passed the state legislature, which mandates needles on wheels for counties that opt in. I think at least three counties have opted in. Do you have any updates for us on what's happening in Santa Cruz, whether they're going to pull this reduced standards of being able to hold people? Right now, previously the standard was danger to yourself, danger to others, or gravely disabled before they could pick you up and drop you in the nut ward and forcibly medicate you. Now they've weakened these standards if the county opts in. Is that happening in Santa Cruz?
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't kept up with the psychiatric system here. I've been kind of busy going back and forth to see my wife, who's incarcerated in the North Carolina psychiatric. So I haven't been that involved lately, but I'm very sympathetic to whatever can be done to stop this fascist oppression within the psychiatric system.
John, I expect a full report from you in your next phone call next week on what the hell is going on in Santa Cruz.
Well, hopefully I can find something about it. I think my friend Jane Kaiser might be more informed, because she's been more an active than I have.
Maybe you can confer
years.
With her and find out.
Yeah,
what's going
I'll
on.
Try to get in touch with her. See, I've gotten a little bit along in years. I'm 73 now and haven't been the best of health, so I haven't caught up with things. But I'm so inflamed by this this war against the Arab people over there in Iraq, and also this war within this country against the homeless and minorities. Yeah.
Well, John, let's talk about that, because I know I've occasionally seen you on the street in front of the O'Neill Sports Shop with a sign asking for, you know, donations for people to assist you to get back on your bus trip across the country to visit your wife.
Yeah, that's true. I
know in the past when I've come upon you, I found that the CSOs, which are the police officers in light blue downtown, there was one officer particularly who was harassing you, who said you couldn't. You had this little sign. He made you stand up, though you are 73 and probably not in the best of health, and so he would not let you sit down, even in places where it was legal to sit. And I told him that was, you know, against the law. And I guess you were able for a time to get him to follow the law, right?
Yes. Thanks to you informing me more about the law at that time. But since they put that draconian law the latter part of last year,
I believe. Yes, the downtown ordinances were passed in the summer of 2002 through the initiative of Rubber Stamp Riley, the mayor of Santa Cruz now and then a council member, and what do we call him? Pinprick Ed Porter, so-called because he is so sensitive when you criticize him. Plus, of course, all the rest of the clowns on the council, with the limited exception of Crone and Sugar, who didn't speak up in any significant way on its impact on homeless people, but did have some civil libertarian objections. It is illegal for you to do what you were doing, to actually sit down with a sign, even though you're bothering no one, blocking no traffic, causing no problems. You have been told you have to stand up, a 73-year-old man. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm trying to stay out of trouble in that regard, because I need to, as I say, I'm planning right now if my health permits, and if we don't have what's called terrorism due to this stupid war where they start blowing up buses in this country. And of course I can understand their feelings, so I plan on going very shortly for an Easter visit with my wife. Before different occasions occur, I do try to get a few cents that way.
Matt, John, another question for
yes.
you?
Yes.
Your opinion has shifted radically in the last few months. You and I had a sort of a disagreement about this issue as recently as 3 or 4 months ago, right?
Well, it was longer than that.
This issue being the Bush.
Being involved with the my knowledge of my limited knowledge of psychiatry as a layman, and I don't like to use their terms. But to 9/11, I was rather traumatized, and I can understand what happened in Nazi Germany in the early 30s. I started to listen to a maniac on the radio named Savage, and somewhat mesmerized by, like the German people were mesmerized by Adolf Hitler, who he is. I would compare him quite a bit with. So I must admit, I had a temporary mental breakdown. Luckily, knowing the ins and outs of the mental health system, I was able to keep myself out of the hospital. But I was temporarily insane, I think, and I admit it, and I've told all my friends that. I've always leaned toward the left as a young man or a boy. I even subscribed to the Socialist Call, and I always had a streak of compassion that sometimes has got me into trouble. I was absolutely traumatized, and now I realize the errors of my way. Bin Laden has not been caught. Mullah Omar has not been caught. The mental breakdown was had a lot to do, too, with Afghanistan. I thought, oh, yes, this we need to get after bin Laden and catch him and all that nonsense. The point of it is I actually think that there's a strong possibility that the junta that's running this country may very well be protecting bin Laden. bin Laden. Now, that's just speculation. I certainly can't prove it, but I know the Laden family was very close to these oil magnates, including the Bush family and the whole Saudi royal family. And so I admit, I'm willing to admit my errors in my way. I'm trying not just to excuse myself, because I really think I did have somewhat of a psychiatric trauma that could have resulted in my hospitalization.
Now, wait a minute, John. Are you saying that all these Bush supporters are nuts?
I think Mr. Bush himself does need to be in a hospital for the criminally insane. I have a problem with this, because I do think, due to his horrendous crime of starting this horrible war, which has involved thousands probably of innocent men, women, and children being blown to bits, as well as suckering young men, mostly from minority and poor communities, to get killed over there, that he is definitely a war criminal. The only defense that possibly an attorney could give, that he is definitely a danger to himself and to others, as the psychiatric system uses as a criteria, and he's not only that, he has criminal tendencies. So I think possibly the humane way is to dispose of him by placing him in one of the hospitals, possibly I think St. Elizabeth's, where they kept Ezra Pound for years, is one of the largest psychiatric hospitals in the country, and I think it might even be federally connected, which would be rather ironic.
John, hold it, John. You're not recommending forced incarceration. This sounds like it would violate your principles.
Well, in a way, I suppose it does, but I'm a pragmatist. I don't like to see him winding up like the Nazi war criminals, because I've also changed my views and I'm 100% against capital punishment. But I think serial killers like Bush, world society, needs to be protected from him and from Wolfowitz and from Cheney and from these other creeps that have taken over this country.
But John, aren't these killers effectuating their murders only because they're in control of a political apparatus? And it seems to me that when you bar them from the political apparatus, and you do such, you can deal with crimes against populations, as, for example, I'm not entirely sure how effectively or satisfactorily it's been done in South Africa, but using reconciliation commissions, this is going to be, I think, a serious issue for those of us who regard what the Republican administration and indeed the Democratic collaborators in Congress are doing as essentially okaying war crimes, crimes against humanity, and crimes against the peace, the three categories of crimes that the UN is supposed to be engaged in stopping.
Well, I think that in these cases, they're so horrendous because, this affects the whole world, and I do subscribe to the idea that there was a plan, was written primarily by this gentleman named Wolfowitz for the Republicans when they got back into power to take over the world. So I think in this case, my pragmatism comes before, unfortunately, possibly some of my principles, because I think the whole world is in danger by these maniacs. And I think this calls for rather draconian actions. As I say, I don't believe that if they were put on trial in The Hague, that they should be hung like the Nazis were after Nuremberg. I'm sticking to my guns about capital punishment, but I do believe for the safety of this human species, which is in grave danger because we have more weapons of mass destruction than all the rest of the world combined, including a tremendous nuclear arsenal, a tremendous arsenal of germ warfare, which may have been due to experiments responsible for this horrendous AIDS epidemic, and also all kind of dangerous chemicals. So I think this calls for for pragmatism, possibly over some principles.
Well, I think one, it isn't. I don't think you have to abandon your principles about forced incarceration of people for these so-called mental illness labels. I think, on the other hand, you can still hold people responsible for actual crimes, whatever their mental state. Although I suppose if someone is insane, that's the defense, even the Supreme
Court.
Well,
I'm not saying this is necessarily what I would do. I'm saying what a defense attorney, naturally, I guess they're entitled to a...
I do believe war criminals should be held responsible for their war crimes, one way or another, whether you do it through jailing them or through some process which reintegrates them into the community through a process of reconciliation. They first have to be held accountable. Of course, our problem right now is to stop the damn war.
That's the number one issue, because this war, I saw yesterday, I got over to the clock tower. I thought there'd be some other people there, but the past couple of times I've gone there, I'm the only person, that's why I'm very worried about the people that are against the war. We've got to keep this up. And luckily, some young man did join me after a while, and I can't stand.
What day was this, John?
Beg pardon?
What day was this?
That was yesterday.
Yeah, I've heard that the 24-hour vigil has largely been dispersed as a 24-hour vigil, though I think Chelsea, who had started, was one of the people who started the first vigil at Cooper and Pacific, was trying to start a second one, and indeed she talked about there was a big thing on campus, I guess it was day before yesterday, Standing United, maybe it was Thursday, Standing United for Peace, and there were speakers, Bettina Aptecker, and...
Yes, I heard about that.
And there were 400 people, according to Metro reporter Sarah Phelan, who spoke to me about it yesterday, but they didn't march downtown, as some hoped they would. Indeed, there does seem to be a contraction of public protests. I guess there was a protest yesterday walking up the Lighthouse Field. I heard that was going on.
I didn't hear about that. I'm trying to keep informed, but...
Indy Media website is a good place to go. Let me announce this again, John, in case anybody has a computer out there and access to the Internet, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and you can also go to the library and use their computer, www.santacruz.indymedia.org. And if people don't even catch this, you can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. There's a message phone there, a little bit out of date, but you can still get useful information. John, anything more before we take off?
Well, I just wanted to say that I think a lot of this at the clock tower, at least, which I try to keep pretty familiar with, started a couple of weeks ago when some activists were evidently harassed. I don't know all the details about whether they got tickets. Maybe they did.
Yeah,
For a floral display. Evidently, they're conducting in Santa Cruz not only a war against the homeless and the poor, but now it's reached the ludicrous stage of a war against flowers. I think because the flowers kind of symbolize the anti-Vietnam protests of the 60s, when, you know, the term flower children was used. And I think flowers tend to represent peace. I remember in, I think it was Czechoslovakia, when Dubček, they had that spring, remember, of freedom.
Spring, yeah.
And I think I remember seeing a picture of some people putting flowers on a Soviet tank.
Earlier today in the show, we played an interview with Maddie, who had said she spoke with Mayor Riley trying to protect the flower wall that was threatened by the police, but to no avail. Thanks, John, for being with us. I got a roll.
Oh, okay. Well, nice talking to you, Robert.
Good to hear you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. In the studio is Walt and Robert fielding calls. Walt's the silent partner here. I always kind of rope my guests into an illusory co-host status where I control the mic, particularly when the other mic doesn't seem to be working. 427-3772, give us a call.
Thank you, Robert. I just wanted to say that I was at the vigil, and I did encounter some people who were opposed to the vigil and were pro-war, and quite a few young people came down, and I was actually talking with a young man who was joining, I believe it was the Air Force at the time, and he was kind of agitated and asking me a lot of questions. And one of them was what I felt about young people who are recruited into protesting against the war, and that they might not know everything about it. And it seemed to him wrong to just include them in that without telling them both sides of the story, so to speak. And actually, he seemed to me like a very impressive and smart young man, and he said that he was going into the military very soon, and that was really pretty sad to me because with what we're doing over there, I truly don't agree with, and war in general is just really tough for me to take because I think that unless it's for defense as a last-ditch effort, it should not be undertaken. But while I was talking to this young man, the thing that I do in the school is to talk to young people and bring them through a rite of passage. The point of this is to have really quality people in the community, people who are men of honor. And when I see somebody just going into a conflict like this and they're just so one-sided, it just makes me think that we're really wasting our resources, our human resources, and really, I think that these young people could be a lot happier and a lot more productive if they were used for something besides going to war. But I really, really had some interesting conversations. Some of the people said that they never really had anyone to talk about these things with, and these are pretty young people. So I'll give this back to you, Robert.
Thanks, Walden. It's a good reason to reestablish a vigil. And in fact, I've suggested we do a vigil in front of the IRS headquarters, which is on Water Street near Ocean, in the pink building across the street from the county building, not too far from where Peace Friday has its troops, so to speak, on Friday, when they stand between, I guess, 4 and 7 at the intersection there, with signs and encouraging people to oppose the war, and have for the last year and a half or so under the leadership of such people as Susan Zeman. We have an incoming call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I'll try to make this as fast as possible since it's the only thing I've heard of that's bound to be effective. In addition to a vigil outside the IRS, I want to give everybody the website givemeliberty.org.
Givemeliberty.org.
Givemeliberty.org. This is the website of a group called, which I've just learned about. I'm amazed that I'm not a little closer to the, which is a group founded for We the People Foundation. Founded by Bob Schultz, and what they've been doing for the apparently since 1999 is to present a petition for redress of grievances centered around the income tax and the Federal Reserve, which has now been it's now turned into 4 petitions for redress of grievances. Also having to do with the war in Iraq, the unconstitutionality, and the fact that it violates international law. And but what they've done with the IRS is absolutely mind-boggling. This guy, they've got a set of questions which they've tried to put to the IRS in a public forum, having to do with the legality of the income tax. The IRS agreed to meet with them, I believe, sometime in 2002. But anyway, you can get informed at this website. And at the very last minute, the IRS ducked out on them, and refused when the people had all met and so on. In the meantime, this We the People Foundation is now publishing ads where Schultz has said that he will pay no further income taxes and is advising people to withhold all taxes until these questions about the legality of the income tax are answered. He sent copies to everyone in Congress, 535. There hasn't been a peep out of anybody, and he's basically been chasing the Department of Justice and the IRS, and they're refusing to meet with him. And now there's this ad that simply says if they're doing anything illegal by being completely upfront about this and telling people to withhold all taxes until these petitions are answered in some way, that they should be informed, and so far they've heard absolutely nothing from mm-hmm. the Department of Justice or from the IRS or from any member of Congress.
So why don't you give us the website again there, Carl?
GiveMeLiberty.org.
GiveMeLiberty.org. And again, I've been asking people to, if they're interested in such a vigil, I put out this proposal on the Internet and also through emails, to give me a call or to, let me know. I'd be supportive. And this would be encouraging people not to pay their taxes, to get information at this table, and also to, visibly oppose the war and encourage the mayor to set up a war resistors zone here in Santa Cruz to find ways of not cooperating with the military and those corporations that are going to be part of the despoiling of Iraq. But so far, we haven't gotten any calls, or I haven't anyway.
Well,
number to call is 423-HUFF. That's the off-air number. You can call on the air to talk more about this. And I appreciate your giving me the website, which once more is?
Well, GiveMeLiberty.org. I've always been, in fact, for 30 years, I've always had doubts about people who say, I absolutely hate what you're doing, and I detest it, and I believe it's illegal and unconstitutional and criminal and so on, but here's the money to do it with.
Yep.
And, of course, the reason people do that is that they're scared, and the only way to fight fear is knowledge. And apparently these people have really done their homework, and the idea of the IRS, the big bugbear, the being chased around the bush many times,
no pun intended,
so to speak,
thank you.
Without any response from anybody in the government, apparently. And this man Schultz has said, I personally am not paying any more taxes.
Okay.
And a lot of people are joining him.
Hey, thank you for that website, and thank you for your thoughts on that. And folks who get in touch should check the website. And also, if they want to do anything about the IRS and a vigil, give a call to 423-HUFF or call the program and talk about it. Thank you very much, caller.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's take it away.